Award-winning radio station WRKC, side note, you're welcome, is proud to present the third season of The Adventures of Harry Flynn. The Adventures of Harry Flynn is written, performed, and directed by King's students. We now present our 29th episode, Shoulder Angels.
It was April 1st, and I was alone in the back room of Glenn's. 6 years ago, my brother Jack was shot so that an illegal speakeasy could keep in business. Each year on the 1st, I'd be at Glenn's by 7, and he'd let me close out the night with as many discounted drinks as I could take, if I promised to not try to leave during the night. Yeah, it's hypocritical, but Prohibition's long over. Glenn?
No, Harry, it's Marla.
I pushed myself to my feet, nearly knocking over my chair as I did so. The short walk to the door was a harrowing one, but eventually I was able to let Marla in. Come to join me?
Not exactly, Harry. I need some help. Oh, wow. That's a lot of empty bottles.
Well, I did start at 7. I headed back to the table and motioned for Marla to join me. She pushed a couple of bottles out of the way and put down a note scrawled in blocky letters. I picked it up to try to read it, gave up, and handed it back to Marla.
That bad, huh? It's a letter addressed to a Simon Weber. He's rich, old money. There was another note like this one a week ago. He didn't pay it any mind, except to get some police to guard his house. This one was found stuck to his bedside table with a knife. And this is while there were officers on duty.
What does it want?
$20,000.
How rich is Mr. Weber exactly?
Just barely $20,000 rich. The letter says that if they don't get the money by midnight, they'll kill him.
Then we've got 4 hours.
2. It's 10 o'clock now.
Huh. Time flies.
The police are on it too, but the more people that are working on it, the better. Are you up for it?
I don't usually work today.
A man's life is in danger. Are you really going to let him die so that you can drink?
That hurt. But she was right. I couldn't sit by and let this happen for my own personal reasons, good as they were. I shook my head and got to my feet to stumble to the door.
Harry!
Glenn! Mind closing up the box?
I'm sorry, Harry. I told her you didn't want to be disturbed, but she insisted. I'll lock it back up.
No, not with me in it. I just don't want that much booze to be just open for anyone to get to. I'll be back later. A wave of dizziness hit me and I leaned against the chair, trying to push back the buzz of the bar so I could think.
You can barely stand.
I'll take care of him. I just want to get a fresh set of eyes on this case.
Yeah, don't worry. We'll be fine.
All right. But be careful. He has a tendency of drifting off into flashbacks when he's been in the box.
Nothing I can't handle.
Marla's words echoed in my head and the bar faded slowly to black.
Nothing I can't handle. I'll go in, confront him in front of his wife, and we'll get him where he belongs. Behind bars.
I was driving with my brother Jack down a hazy street with a pile of information in my lap. He was puffing on a cigarette with an almost amused smirk on his face.
He was clever to hide the stolen money in his automotive business. If we hadn't gone over the books again, we'd have missed it.
Yeah, that was something. Do you ever feel like criminals are getting smarter?
Nah. It's the same every day. Just the old cases don't look so bad once you know who did it.
Makes sense. So what's the plan after we bring him in?
Well, then I give his daughter my card, and then you and me can hit the town. She'll call in the next couple of days, and then I'll hit the town with her. It's a good life, Harry.
Yeah, I guess it is.
You stick with me, kiddo, and I'll get you money to buy the finest suits and any woman you like. Maybe that Carolyn girl you're always talking about.
Harry, can you hear me?
Carolyn? The car faded, and I was in a chair at Glenn's with Marla and Glenn looking down at me. He handed me a glass of water.
See? Flashbacks.
No, Harry, it's Marla. Are you sure you can do this?
Yeah, I can do this. Just stick with me, kiddo, and we'll get this thing cracked in no time. I just need a second.
Yeah, I'll go start the car.
After finishing the water and tipping Glenn, I stumbled to Marla's shiny red 1939 Buick and got into the passenger seat. I never had been completely clear on how she was able to afford a ride like that, but I sure wasn't going to complain.
Feeling better?
Not much, but there's not a whole lot we can do about that right now.
True.
We drove on in silence while I looked out the window, trying desperately not to get sick. The estate wasn't far away, with empty roads and glowing lampposts. More respectable people were in bed for work in the morning, but private eyes have different hours. Turns out, so do older, moneyed individuals who've had their life threatened. Simon Weber met us at the door, himself in a navy suit with a pistol that looked to be from the Great War. He recognized Marla, gave me a cursory glance, and let us in. Officers Richard Murphy and Eliza Spinoza were standing in the foyer.
Harry, good to see you.
Hey, Murph, how have you been?
Miss Newman, I'm glad you're back.
Mr. Weber, this is Harry Flynn, the other private detective I was telling you about.
Spinoza.
What?
Don't mind her. She does that.
I'm not good at this.
But I'm sure you're very good at police work.
Yes, I'm good at police work.
This is ridiculous. I asked for police protection and they send over a rookie in a head case. I don't know. The city police are all useless or corrupt.
As Simon Weber spoke, I made my way to one of the chairs and sat down as carefully as I could. The world was spinning and his voice faded to a more familiar one. In the past 25 years, nearly the entire police force had been changed out, but the building was the same dull gray walls.
No, you can't understand my frustration. I told you I needed someone at my place for 20 minutes. Shaw waited for 5 and then left.
He believed that there was justifiable reason to leave.
He went and bought a donut.
Well, technically it was a cruller.
Shut up, Shaw.
It all turned out all right, Charlie.
My sons were at home, and that maniac broke in and held my boys on gunpoint.
Which is why I understand that you killed him instead of bringing him in.
This happens again, and I'll kick down the door and whoop every last one of you.
Say, Charlie, I really am sorry about that.
Ugh! Damn it, Flynn!
Come on, Harry. We're going.
We walked out of the station, and I was back in Simon Weber's foyer. Marlowe was giving me significant looks, but apparently I'd been fast enough that the rest hadn't noticed.
We've got 6 men on the perimeter keeping a lookout, and the 2 of us in here.
He got past your cops earlier. If you don't go out and find him, he'll get in and find me.
Let's not forget, sir, your blackmailer could be a man or a woman. The handwriting's non-conclusive.
Marla and I will keep an eye out in case he's a woman, because that way we'll know how to think like him and he'll be easier for us to catch.
Thanks, Spumosa. You can be in charge of that. Mr. Weber, is there anyone else who lives here with you?
No, my daughter Emmy moved out 2 years ago and my drunken idiot son left when he was 16. He comes to beg for his room back every once in a while, but I don't need his sort of trouble.
I doubt you maintain this place all on your own. Are there other people who have keys?
I have a cook and a woman who cleans up once a week. They each have keys, as do my children.
We spoke with the cook and maid earlier.
Get his children here if you can. I at least need to talk to them on the phone.
Harry, can I speak to you for a minute?
Marla guided me a couple of steps away from the others and lowered her voice to talk.
Harry, this is my investigation. I wanted you to come and help, not try to take over.
I'm not trying to take over, but we're running low on time. We need to make things happen fast.
Your face is getting all flushed. Maybe you're not in a condition to...
Marla, I've got your back in this. You need backup? I'm here.
All right. Just don't overdo it. Murphy, make those calls.
Hey, Murph, mind if I use the phone real quick beforehand? I took the phone and dialed Deborah's home number. It was a little after 10:20, but hopefully she'd understand the importance of the matter.
Hello?
Deborah, I need something.
Mr. Flynn, you've got to be kidding me. Do you know what time it is?
Yeah, I know. Late. Look, this is important. A life is at stake.
I get one day off the entire year, and that's today. I had a nice dinner, had a glass of wine, got to bed at a good time. I was going to get a good night's sleep.
You took off 2.5 weeks to go to Acapulco. I need my gun for a case.
Here, let me make a deal with you. I'll do that, but I get a 4-day weekend.
All right, fine. Deal.
Thank you very much, Mr. Flynn. What was that address, then?
I told her the address and then handed the phone to Murphy as my consciousness started to slide away again. I tried to hold on, but within seconds all I saw was black.
We'll return for the exciting conclusion of Shoulder Angels, but first a word from our sponsor.
I heard that you and Natalie have started going steady.
That's true. I asked her to the homecoming dance and she said yes.
Well, golly, it must be nice to be able to get all the ladies. What's your secret?
It's the hair dicer.
Really? I was going to guess charm and hygiene.
Then you'd be wrong, my little ignorant friend. From the company that brought you the tomato dicer, apple dicer, and the pork dicer comes the all-new hair dicer. The company that's become a household name in the kitchen is now moving to the barbershop.
Wait, you put your head in there?
All dicer products are box-sized, just slightly larger than whatever goes inside them. At the push of a button, carefully aligned blades inside the box will spring to life, slicing and dicing whatever's inside. It's as fashionable as it is terrifying. Each hair dicer is carefully calibrated to your intended head size and haircut. Simply put the hair dicer on every day and keep the same look without combing or regular haircuts. But don't take our word for it. Listen to our few surviving testimonials.
I've used dicer products for years to get my tomatoes, zucchinis, and radishes sliced the exact way that I want them. So when I heard that I could have my hair done just as easily, I leapt at the chance. Now I'll have safe, fun haircuts for free every day, assuming I don't mix up my hair dicer and my watermelon dicer.
I got the hair dicer as a hand-me-down from my older sister. She always has the coolest haircuts. Turns out my ears stuck out more than hers do, but but after the hair dicer cut them off, I didn't even have to adjust it. Thanks, hair dicer.
I always got bored with my regular barbers. They would tell stories or talk to me, but I could barely stay awake. Now every morning I get to have a haircut that brings me to the point of such incredible terror that I begin each day with a renewed love of life.
Well, ready to give it a shot?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Just put on the hair dicer, push the button, and...
Wow! Now I feel handsome and horrified!
Uh-oh. I think we should call a doctor.
If you'd like a hair dicer, just call 1-800-CUT-FAST. That's 1-800-CUT-FAST. Call now and receive an extra hair dicer free! Perfect for gifts and most sizes double as a chicken dicer in a pinch! Warning. Calibration of the hair dicer requires expert measurements that can only be done by a certified dicer employee. Do not attempt to self-calibrate dicers of any kind. Do not use dicers for incorrect objects. Dicer Co. is not responsible for loss of ears, noses, eyebrows, or other appendages. Not legal in all states.
Seriously, that's a lot of blood. Please call a doctor. We now return to the exciting conclusion of The Adventures of Harry Flynn.
I was sitting down at the kitchen table in my parents' house across from Carolyn, busy doing homework. I was busy watching Carolyn.
I bet if you concentrate just a little bit harder, you can get yourself to lift up that pencil.
I'll get it done. I'm in no hurry. And it's what, 2 pages?
Harry, it's due tomorrow, and it's 5 pages.
I'll get it done.
You need to start trying harder, Harry. Otherwise, we won't be able to go to journalism school together.
Say, Carolyn, what would you think if I started working with my brother?
With Jackie Boy? You'd go crazy. You wouldn't last a day.
Seriously, Carolyn, there's good money in private investigating, and there's a job opening.
He's thinking of taking on a partner?
Not exactly.
An assistant?
Yeah, to answer calls, file, you know, administrative things.
So a secretary.
Damn it, everyone keeps saying secretary.
Charles Harold, watch your language.
Sorry, Mom.
Want me to hit him for you, Mrs. Flynn?
Ow! She didn't even answer yet.
That's because I've got to keep you in line either way.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Look, I'll work the job for a couple of years, and then I'll have the money and I can go. We'll get a job at the same newspaper. It'll be great.
Just as long as you don't try to join the business. It's bad enough to have Jack out there.
He'll be fine, Mom. And don't worry. The last thing I want to be is a private eye.
I'm so glad you have so many qualified people here to protect my father. I mean, sure, that Officer Spinoza is a bit strange, but it takes all types.
I shook my head and was back in the Webber's estate, listening to the discussion between Simon Webber and a black-haired woman who I assumed to be his daughter.
Emmy, this is Harry Flynn. When he thinks exceptionally hard, he sometimes looks like he's daydreaming. Isn't that right, Mr. Flynn?
Oh yeah, I think very hard. All the time. To solve cases.
I see.
Emmy here was just answering a couple of questions for me. Now, you were saying something about your key?
Yes, it went missing earlier today. When I got back from work, it was gone from its usual place. I really don't know where it could be.
So that means there aren't 4 suspects. Anyone could have taken the keys and gotten in.
Is the key distinct in any way?
No, it's just a copper key.
I see.
Does that mean something?
Depends. What's your brother's name?
Roger.
Good to know.
Come on, Harry. Stop trying to be all smooth. Those answers won't tell you anything.
You're right. At least not until I verify that Emmy's last name isn't Webber.
No, I'm married. It's Fitzgerald.
So, if we assume that the person who took the key is the one who left the note, that means that the suspect pool is made up of people who know you well enough to know the address of your father, where you keep the key, how to get into your house, and when you are at work.
That's kind of a stretch.
I got Emmy Fitzgerald's address and phone number, explaining that I may need to contact her in the future. But I had a hunch that I knew exactly the man to look for. All right, I think we're done here.
Harry, this is my investigation.
Fine, stay here and do your investigating. How long until midnight?
An hour.
All right, then I've got 30 minutes for each of the 2 people I want to talk to.
You aren't planning on driving.
Deborah will be here soon, Murph. She'll drive me.
I'm taking your badge and your weapon!
Spinoza, not now!
You're off the case, too. You're all off the case!
I left Spinoza, apparently having some kind of mental breakdown, in the lobby to wait outside. I thought back over what I had from the case and tried to put Marla's stubbornness out of my head. Of course, the one day I want Deborah to be on time, she's taking forever. Maybe another flashback will start. No? 5 tedious minutes later, Deborah pulled up and I got into her car. Deborah, I need you to drive me somewhere.
What? Are you crazy? It's 11 o'clock at night.
And I'm in a hurry. Come on, this is important.
No, absolutely not.
Will you do it for another 4-day weekend?
What's the address?
She sped off towards the address as I leaned my head back and faded into sleep again. The door in front of me said Charlie Flynn, Private Eye. One of the many times that Mom sent me to stop him from being late for dinner. After knocking again and waiting for a minute, I took the key my mom had given me and let myself quietly in. The front desk was on its side and papers were scattered everywhere. And there was Dad, with his sleeves rolled up, holding a panicked-looking man against the wall.
I don't believe you, and you're not going to convince me. So where did you see her? Spill.
I didn't, I swear.
Where did you see her?
It was more than a little terrifying. I made a sound of surprise and he turned.
Harry, the hell are you doing here?
I came to get you for dinner.
All right. Go home and tell your mother I won't make it in time. It's looking like a long night. Ready, Rich?
No. I'll talk. I'll tell you everything. Just let me go.
Harry, give me 5 minutes. I'll walk you home.
I waited at the door for 4 minutes, hearing an occasional thumping sound and muffled voices. Then my father walked out, holding the man by the back of his coat. The police were arriving at about the same time.
Just got to take care of this, Harry.
Oh, we're gonna be late! And it's roast beef and potatoes!
Don't worry. Of course it would be, Officer Shaw. Shaw! This man has admitted to aiding and abetting a kidnapper.
What happened to him?
He took some convincing.
This is why you never made it as a cop.
And also why I close all your cases. Just cuff him. I've got to go. Roast beef and potatoes for dinner. We move on the real kidnapper in 40 minutes. Meet at my place.
Wait, you know where he is?
Yeah, but I'm going to be there when we bring him in. 40 minutes, Shaw. Don't be late or I move without you.
As I stepped into the car, it changed into Deborah's. Damn it, this happens every year. We were parked at the Fitzgeralds' house, and after a brief moment of difficulty standing, I made my way to the door and started knocking loudly and continuously. Soon a broad-faced man with a thick mustache opened the door.
What the hell do you want?
Mr. Fitzgerald?
Yeah, very good. That's me. Now beat it or I call the cops.
That wouldn't help much. You see, I'm trying to protect your wife from prison.
My wife? What do you know about my wife?
Just that she's in trouble related to her father, and I think it's because of Roger.
Can't be. We don't see either of them often. Emmy doesn't like getting involved.
But she must have Roger's address somewhere. Can you get it for me?
Will you leave if I do?
Immediately.
Yeah, give me a second.
He walked back inside, and after about 15 seconds of waiting, I let myself in too. On a coat rack near the door was a heavy black jacket that looked like it would fit Emmy's husband. I checked the pockets while listening carefully for his return. A set of car keys, a pen, a receipt for dry cleaning, and 3 folded $20 bills. I stepped back outside, thanked the man when he gave me the address, and returned to the car where Deborah was waiting.
Well, did he do it?
I don't think so. No motive. Whoever sent the note needs to...
Oh, I didn't actually care. I was just making conversation.
Oh. Well, I need to make another stop. I gave Deborah the instructions, and she drove off, complaining every second of the way. Soon we were in the neighborhood of Roger's apartment.
Now where?
We're looking for a bar that's a bit too busy for this time of night. Closer to the apartment is better.
There's an awful lot of cars at that one.
Pull in. It was a run-down place that stunk of drink and burned cigarettes. I passed through the door, gave a bouncer near the back a 20, and entered the gambling hall, making a note that Deborah was like a good luck charm. I approached the man by a roulette table with a wide grin on my face.
Fancy a spin? $5.
Fancy answer is better. 20.
Depends upon the questions.
Roger Weber. You know him?
Ah, you're a friend of Roger's?
Yeah, and I've got $20 and want to know how much he's been winning.
Nah, he's got the worst luck. I tell ya, you want to make that 20 back? Play cards with him.
Thanks, pal. I turned from the table and started to hurry out to make a very important phone call. As I walked, I was overtaken by memories again.
Stick by me, kiddo. This isn't the nicest of locations.
I still don't understand why we came here.
You go where the cases lead.
After showing off pins at a hardware store, we were inside the foulest building I'd ever been in. It was a speakeasy, an illegal bar and gambling den. But seriously, here?
Hey, maybe it won't be all bad. I might be doing you a favor.
All around, money was changing hands as people spun the wheel, flipped cards, or rolled dice. But we weren't there for fun, which Jack made very clear to me.
We're not here for fun, but we need to seem like it. Go on, get a drink or something.
I might try that wheel game. Jack turned suddenly and slapped me upside the head.
Ah! Harry, kiddo, you listen to me and listen good. You can come down here and drink and smoke and dance with 1,000 girls, but there's one thing you don't do down here, and that's touch anything related to gambling.
Why not? Maybe I could win something.
That doesn't happen. The house wins. Every time. You start out thinking you can make it all back, but every man who throws a set of dice ends up coming back. You've got that pretty Carolyn girl of yours, but she's smart. You get down and useless, she'll be gone.
Oh, come on, Jack. Ease off.
Gamblers are desperate men. They'll do whatever it takes to get what they need. Steer clear of them. Now go get drunk or something. I'm on business.
He stepped away into the crowd and disappeared as I came to, holding the barkeeper's phone, and rapidly dialing the Weber's number.
Hello?
Marla, has Roger arrived?
No. Harry, where are you? I can barely hear you.
When he arrives, arrest him. Cuff him right there.
No, you've got to be joking.
If you don't, Simon will end up dead. Roger's the killer. I'll be there in 15. Just do it. I slammed the phone down and ran to the car. When we got there, a beat-up car was parked outside the estate. Damn it. I practically kicked down the door to find Murphy patting down a handcuffed, disgruntled man.
A concealed pistol.
I'm taking your badge and your weapon!
Roger? No, that can't be.
You? You? After all I did for you!
You did nothing for me, Dad!
How'd you know?
It had to be someone close to Simon to know that he had the money. It was someone who could get into both the estate and Emmy's house without too much difficulty. Money is a powerful motivator. Mr. Fitzgerald had some spare change in his pockets and no sign of being hard up, so I went looking for gambling halls near Roger's apartment.
So it was blind luck?
Not at all. Simon's overbearing and demanding. He wouldn't help his son to be a failure. So Roger gets pressure from the hated patriarch and knows he won't get support back home. He needed fast money to put off the loan sharks, and a gambling man is a desperate man. He'll do whatever it takes to get what he needs, even killing his own father. At this point, apparently I passed out, because the next thing I remember was waking up on my desk. It wasn't hard to prove the case against Roger afterward. Marla sent me a cut from her bill, but didn't make any kind of comment on it. But that's fine. Despite how it may seem, I'm not a desperate man. I'm just keeping up the family business.
This has been The Adventures of Harry Flynn, presented by WRKC. This week's episode, Shoulder Angels, was written by Brandon Leon Gambetta. Our cast today was Brandy George as Deborah, Fearless, Mrs. Flynn, and Spumosa. Brandon Leon Gambetta as Flynn and Roulette Guy. Jen Momenzada as Marla and Cooking. Drake Nestor as Jack and Commercial Announcer. Lucas Tomasacci as Announcer, Weber, Shaw, Rich, Suave, and Commissioner. Mark Zurich as Murphy, Charlie, Roger, Unsuave, Glenn, and Fitzgerald. And our special guest tonight was Elsbeth Denman as Emmy, Carolyn, and Earless. Can't get enough Harry Flynn? Find us on Facebook or log on to harryflynn.wikia.com for episode summaries, cast lists, trivia, and MP3s of previous episodes.